WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Student Section MLB. I'm, of course, your host, Carson Keel, with
Tyler Harrison
and Luke Anderson.
And I guess let's get right into things. Of course, we left you guys off last Wednesday. The ALCS, the NLCS, those were the night before that show. We talked about how a World Series would be happening. Of course, the first game was last Friday. Now we are entering into Game 5. I believe that is getting ready to start. Last I saw, they were entering warm-ups. Of course, it's a national broadcast, so the start time is really about 7:30. So we'll at least be entering through the first about two innings probably throughout the entire show. But guys, I guess your thoughts. Tyler, let's start with you. I mean, Texas has been absolutely dominating, even through their injuries against Arizona.
Oh, yeah. Witnessing the first game of the World Series, I thought the Diamondbacks would take game one. Obviously, a lot of people did going into the bottom of the eighth inning, and then Corey Seager's two-run home run, Adolis Garcia's walk-off in the 11th. A great way to start a World Series after coming off a 2-7-game series. And I personally thought going into today's show it was going to be a 2-2 series. I thought right before the show went on air, I was talking about how I thought Adolis Garcia's end to his playoff run was going to maybe give the Diamondbacks a chance to tie up the series and force at minimum six games. And the 11-7 final score really showed me what I know, because even with the Diamondbacks' five runs in the last two innings, they were down double-digit runs at one point, and it's looking like today may be the last day of baseball for a while.
Yes. I mean, you absolutely have a point. I mean, Texas, their offense has been absolutely on fire. I mean, that's been what's keeping them alive this entire series, I would argue. I mean,
the whole playoffs.
Yeah. Luke, I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, you're the person who selected that the Texas Rangers would win the World Series, and they're one game away from that being a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the series, like I said last week, I thought it would be kind of close, like competitive games at least. I said it would be five games, but they would be competitive. But Texas has come away pretty handily with their three wins so far. And I mean, they're one win away from winning the World Series. And actually, I mean, I did think they would win, but I mean, here I am a couple weeks, I think three shows ago, when I said I think the Rangers are going to win the World Series, and now they're one game away from doing it. So I can be cemented as a radio legend, I guess, for that prediction. I don't know. But, I mean, I think so far, I mean, we'll go through and kind of brief all the games in a little bit, but I think so far, just kind of an overview, I think it's been a pretty interesting series so far. I mean, like, we've seen two blowouts, one for either team, but we've also seen two really close, fun, good games. So I think it's been a good series to watch. I don't know. I mean, I saw a report that game one was the least watched opening game of World Series ever, or second game two. But either way, I mean, the ratings might be low, but I think that it's been a very fun series to watch so far. I've enjoyed it.
I mean, this has been, I think this is what helps when it comes to baseball. More offense equals more eyes. I mean, come on. Even with the steroid era, even with the cheating that was happening, why did people want to tune into games? Hit a dinger, you know? And it's just like, okay, maybe this is where, again, we've had the ball controversy where, again, some balls are being used for certain games. I would not be shocked if those lighter balls are being used for these World Series games. It's just like, okay, you're trying to draw attention. And I mean, I guess let's just go ahead and start, like, kind of going back and talking about everything. Let me. I love the MLB website. It totally isn't janky at all. Hold on.
Yeah, sometimes the website is buggy. That's why. I mean,
I use ESPN.
Yeah, that's true. Let me go back to the game.
I'm a true MLB fan. I use their wonderful website.
I'm a Braves fan. I have to use Bally Sports.
That's also true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess let's go and get into things. Of course, game one was during the. If I can get it pulled up. Come on, work. Work, you dumb website. There we go.
You got it?
Yes. I had it, then it did. There we go. So this was, of course, the walk-off win for Texas. Arizona, it looks like they had shut down that game at the very start. But you know, that I guess I was going to talk about that. Three runs in the first inning. I mean, and especially when you're up to bat, you would think, okay, that is the ultimate demoralizer. That should shut down my opponent right there. I mean, Tyler, wouldn't you agree with that statement? And like how Texas was ultimately able to make that comeback.
I completely agree. That was off of Jordan Montgomery, too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
excuse
me.
It was the third inning, not the first inning. I don't know why I said that.
Well, still, the first three innings, you want, with how well Jordan Montgomery has been pitching, it's a demoralizer for the Rangers, at least at the start of the game, clearly. Not at the end, but we'll get to that. At the start of the game, being down three runs in the first time through your order as a batting team, you really are hoping for some type of spark. You're hoping for maybe some bloop singles, draw some walks, take a hit by pitch, maybe get a home run here or there to kind of get a rally started. And obviously that's what we saw at the end of the game. It was 5-3. There was a save opportunity up for the Diamondbacks, and Corey Seager just hits an absolute missile, ties the game. That crowd erupted. Jose Leclerc comes in for the Rangers in the 10th and 11th inning and gets 6 up, 6 down. If it wasn't 6 up, 6 down, I think he allowed a walk, and that was it. But pitched two amazing extra innings in one of the clutchest spots of his life. And then they bring in Miguel Castro. He throws one pitch to Adolis Garcia and just left it over the middle. He was staying away from Adolis the whole at bat. He tries to throw a sinker in on the hands, gets away from him, and it goes right down the middle of the plate, and game is over that quickly.
I think it just goes to show how much kind of oomph this kind of Texas team has. I mean, we won't talk about Garcia and the injury yet, but like, I mean, you're just going, and I see you looking over there. Is the game started quite yet?
Marcus Semien is stepping up, and I'm seeing that the Rangers in the last two games have outscored the Diamondbacks 13-0 in the first three innings of the game.
Yeah. Well, speaking of scoring, but when it comes to Arizona, let's talk about game two a little bit. That was a beatdown.
That's a bounce back.
Yeah. Well, at least we thought it was going to be a possible bounce back for Arizona. I mean, let's talk about how that lineup absolutely destroyed the Texas Rangers. Texas didn't even have a chance in the last three innings.
Yeah, I mean, if you just go back to that game, I mean, really quickly, I mean, game one, Arizona looked like they had a control of it, and, I mean, two swings ended that game in a loss for them, but they looked like they were in control for a decent amount of the game. After the third inning, they looked like they were handling it pretty well, but, I mean, it's just a complete, I mean, outclass in game two on all sides. I mean, 16 hits to Texas's 4, and scoring 9 runs, I mean, if you look at the box score, I mean, everyone who's in the Diamondbacks starting lineup recorded a hit. I mean, you have Corbin Carroll went 2-for-5. I mean, Tommy Pham went 4-for-4 that game.
He could have been the first ever 5-for-5 game in the World Series, but he said in an interview after the game he wanted Lane Thomas, who was a rookie, to get his first ever World Series at bat instead of being able to have a chance to go 5-for-5.
So I know, I saw that too.
That is a team player. You love to see it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, in terms of pitching, I mean, Merrill Kelly with 7 innings of 3-hit ball is absurd. I mean, that what a start from him. I mean, that game two really – I mean, game one was super dramatic, and, I mean, I think it kind of clued people into this is going to be a lot better of a series than people thought, and then game two is kind of just like, oh. But, I mean, it was the Diamondbacks who won and evened the series. If it was Texas who put down a beatdown like that and went up 2-0 in the series, then I think people would stop tuning in. But tying the series 1-1 like that and such a statement like that is exactly what Arizona needed for that to split the home or the away for stand for them going back to the desert. So
well, I guess when it comes to that, it's not like that exactly helped, because let's talk about the Monday game. Texas, 3 runs in the third, that's all they need. Arizona got 1, but they have a victory over Arizona. I mean, again, Texas pitching, when they're not kind of having their moments, absolutely able to go in and just shut down the Arizona Diamondbacks lineup. I mean, again, I think that's something that should be talked about, because who was caring about the Rangers, you know, pitching? I mean, it was Scherzer.
Rangers fans were caring.
That was it.
They were worried about their bullpen going into the playoffs in general, and now at the World Series, when it comes down to bullpen games, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Rangers fans were scared in game one in extra innings. Like, oh, man, we may give up a few runs. Scared in Monday's game about giving up a few runs.
It's an important fact. But, again, you go from, okay, we've had the offensive kind of beatdowns to, all right, now we have a pitching duel, essentially, with very limited runs and very limited spots. I mean, that's kind of a big kind of difference right there between the two different styles that we saw. I mean, Luke, I mean, what's your thoughts? Again, we'll talk about how Scherzer's injury and stuff like that, but the Rangers pitching, you had to be impressed by that Game 3.
Yeah, I mean, Game 3 was the only one I was able to watch in full. I've watched pieces of the other games, but I watched all that game all the way through, and I mean, I never expected. I mean, even the first two starts Max Scherzer had in the postseason against Houston, I was very concerned watching those starts for him and for Texas, like, if they could win games that he was starting, but he was pitching very, very well to start that game. I mean, three innings of two hits before he unfortunately got hurt. He got drilled in the back by a comebacker right at him. And I mean, that was a crazy play. Josh Jung ended up making the out after the took a weird bounce off Max Scherzer's shoulder, but that sent him out of the game. And I mean, but the bullpen, I mean, they sent in Gray to follow up Scherzer for some long relief. And I mean, the bullpen only let up four hits over the course of the last six innings of the game. So I mean, that's just an incredible performance. And like you said, Carson, I mean, like I've said this, I mean, the entire playoffs, while I've been rooting for the Rangers, I've said their Achilles heel has been their bullpen. And I mean, we'll get to Game 4, but obviously you saw that in Game 4. But Game 3 was really good by them all around. But I mean, one thing to note too is, I mean, the Rangers got out hit in this game, but it was Corey Seager's two-run homer that obviously, I mean, didn't make that matter at all. I don't know. I mean, Tyler, what do you think?
I mean, I completely agree. I think I wanted to see a solid seven innings out of Scherzer on Monday. I wanted to see it. I know my prediction was Diamondbacks in seven, which is a pretty long shot as of right now, as Zach Gallen goes 1-2-3 to start the game. But I wanted to see a solid seven innings out of Scherzer. I was kind of sad for him. I mean, I know he was a Met. I know I had my mostly downs and no ups with him.
Yeah, he had a cup of coffee there.
But I wanted to see it. It was upsetting to see him get taken out after three innings when, obviously, the 1-5-3 put out. Still amazing to watch. I'm glad though that he was still in line for the win, correct?
I mean, well, he only pitched three innings, so I don't think he got the win.
Oh, he didn't?
Yeah, no, Gray got the win because he only – I mean, he would have – the thing is, he probably would have ended up pitching five full innings, and he would have got the win, assuming he kept pitching like that, which it didn't seem like that was going to stop. But, yeah, so he did not record the win, unfortunately.
Well, I know Sonny Gray was intended to start Tuesday's game.
Oh, really?
He was intended to start until he was called in for long relief after Scherzer's injury. Clearly, I don't think if Sonny Gray started or not on Tuesday, it was going to matter.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, I like what Carson said a couple minutes ago. I think Rangers fans were likely worried about their pitching coming into this World Series. And, I mean, they could walk away with a World Series championship off of a Nathan Eovaldi start tonight. He is 3-0. With a sub-1.8 ERA in clinching games in his career. So I would not be surprised if he can close out this game and give the Rangers their first World Series win after losing back-to-back in 2010 and 2011.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this really interesting article about Game 3 specifically, and I forgot that it was Game 3 that this happened. I mean, the Rangers avoided a pretty huge jam on a nice Adolis Garcia outfield assist, and that also really saved the day for them, and then Max Scherzer cleaned up that second inning after that. But, I mean, a couple extra stats from that game, like, before we move on, is Corey Seager's home run that he hit, that two-run homer, is the hardest-hit home run in the World Series under StatCast. The Rangers, up until Game 3, and they did homer yesterday, correct?
Yes.
So the Rangers now have homered in 15 consecutive playoff games coming into today, and including yesterday's win, which we'll get to, the Rangers now have won 10 straight on the road. So big road warriors by them.
It was already a playoff record when they were 9-0.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I mentioned it in this article, and of course they won yesterday too. So that game 3 was very big for them, and that was just kind of dominant performance as well. So.
Now, I guess let's go ahead and let's talk about the spooky game first. Of course, on the spookiest day of the year, Texas gets an 11-7 win over the Arizona Diamondbacks. First inning, no runs. But then in the next two, Texas absolutely dominates, 10 runs total. Arizona attempts a comeback, but nothing comes of it. I guess your guys' thoughts when it comes to what happened yesterday's game. I mean, that was as close to a blowout as you could get without the Arizona near comeback.
I tell you what, game 4 was actually the only game that I haven't watched in full. I watched parts of it at the end when the Diamondbacks, had to make their astonishing 12-run comeback by the end of it. But I was doing homework, and I checked ESPN, and first inning, it was clean for both sides. Second inning, I saw the Rangers put up 3 runs, and I was like, all right, that's a good start. That's a good start. The Diamondbacks could definitely come back and get that done. And I put my phone down for 7 minutes, and I come back, and the Rangers had been through their lineup twice in 3 innings, and almost everyone had come around to score. And when I tell you that shocked me as someone who, I'll be honest, I'm rooting for the Rangers because they've never won a World Series as a squad, but my prediction was the Diamondbacks in 7. So prediction-wise, I was shocked. But for who I was rooting for, I was like, you know what? If they're going to go down as an amazing offensive team to win the World Series, then absolutely go for it. As a quick update for the game, Corbin Carroll walks on 4 pitches to start for the Diamondbacks and then steals on the first pitch that is thrown. So, everyone in America, you have now received free tacos because of that steal in the World Series. You're welcome.
a lot going on. I guess let's quickly, even though we're starting to run a little low on time, let's talk about the injuries that the Rangers are now facing, though. Garcia, who has been an absolute kind of menace when it comes to the plate, when it comes to hitting against the Arizona Diamondbacks pitching, he's expected to be out for the rest of the series. Looks like it's a pretty gnarly injury. No one's exactly sure what it is yet. That's the last I checked. Does anyone have any updates about that, what the possible injury is?
I'm not sure exactly what the injury is, but yeah, I don't think I'm pretty sure he's definitely not returning for, even if there's a game 7, I don't think he has any chance of coming back for that. So, but I don't know exactly what the injury is. But.
And then, of course, Max Scherzer, I hate saying this, but not exactly surprised that the man is injured. I say that with the best intentions because...
No, I mean, you're right, yeah. Sadly. So...
But two big losses for Texas as they enter these possible 3 final games. I guess your guys' thoughts on these injuries. Of course, Garcia is probably the bigger loss of the two, even though Scherzer is a big loss, with how potentially the Texas is going to go into the game tonight and possibly a game 6, possibly even a game 7.
Yeah, like I said, the Max Scherzer injury was very sad, especially during that game. Like I said, he was pitching very well in that game. But that injury is not as concerning for them because Max Scherzer won't be ready to start again until Game 7 anyway, and they have Game 5 and Game 6 to win and not even need that Game 7 where Max would be starting. Now, if it does get to that Game 7, then missing Max Scherzer is going to be very dangerous for them. They'll probably start Andrew Heaney, I guess, on short day's rest. Maybe Dunning will start. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, that's far in the future now, if it will get there. But the Adolis Garcia injury, I mean, ALCS MVP and playing out of his mind in the first 3 games in the postseason, very sad to see him be hurt, especially if you are a Texas fan. I mean, he was the MVP that he would have been World Series MVP if he played every game. I mean, Corey Seager is obviously playing extremely well too. He would have put up a fight, but I have no doubt Adolis Garcia would have won it if he were not to be hurt. But I mean, you look and I was talking about him before. Travis Jankowski has come in to replace Adolis Garcia in the lineup, and I love Jankowski because he's a former Met player, and he's fun to watch. But he started the game 2-for-2 last night. So, I mean, he didn't do quite too poorly at all, and, I mean, he had some very large shoes to fill, but he did his job, so we'll see if he can do that. I mean, he's still batting ninth, so he hasn't come up yet in this game, and he won't for a couple innings, but we'll see how he plays in this game. But I mean, it's nice to see some production out of that spot after you lose your best hitter. So
Tyler, I guess your thoughts real quick on these injuries.
Along with Scherzer, yeah, he was in line to pitch a game 7 if it came down to it. It's not looking like it would, and I don't know if this is the reason why I could never be a manager. If the Rangers, their bullpen is pitching like they have been, minus game 2, that they gave up 9, it was a 9-run game given up by the entire Rangers team. That's completely, that does not matter right now. It is game 5. Would you go a bullpen game in game 7?
I mean, here's the thing. Texas has been absolutely wonderful with their bullpen. That's a serious question you have to ask yourself.
Right. So, I agree with you, Luke. Yes, it's sad to see Scherzer and how his postseason ended, but at least he may not have to pitch a game, could still get a ring.
All right. Well, we'll be back in 5 minutes. We got to talk about Craig Counsell, possibly Astros, Mets. I mean, it seems like the man is looking everywhere besides the Brewers. Managerial positions are starting to open up, and we have more. So, quick 5-minute break. We'll be right back.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
And hello, everyone. Welcome back to Student Section MLB. Of course, your host here, Carson Keel, with
Tyler Harrison
and Luke Anderson.
And guys, I guess we don't just have the World Series to talk about. We have managerial positions. What's kind of the word on that? People in the hot seat, people possibly getting fired, or new jobs. Then we also have, I guess let's get into this one after we kind of do a quick update when it comes to Game 5 of the World Series. The San Diego Padres, and they took a small loan out. So let's get right into things. What's the update real quick, Tyler, when it comes to Game 5 of the World Series?
When it comes to Game 5, even though Corbin Carroll started the game off with a walk and ended up at third base with one out, there was... infield got brought in. Eovaldi gets second out, walks Christian Walker to put runners on first and third, and Eovaldi has gotten through the first inning without allowing a run, even though he allowed 2 base runners.
Still, you know, again, we're entering bottom of the second, correct?
Yes, Mitch Garver is up to bat. Zach Gallen, I mean, he's on track to pitch a perfect game. 3 up, 3 down so far.
All right. Well, I guess speaking of kind of things being perfect, not exactly, let's talk about the San Diego Padres' $50 million loan. Have you guys seen the news today, or am I the only one who caught this?
I hadn't heard it before you brought it up. I didn't really consider the importance of it. I was like, wow, a team who spent $1 billion in the offseason needs money. Wow, ain't that something. Couldn't have expected that.
Yeah. The Athletic kind of put this out today. The team apparently took this loan out in September to help with their kind of end-of-year paying when it comes to player salaries. So, again, the Padres, again, just they have this in the article. I think this is important to remind people. The Padres have a payroll of $250 million. That's a lot of money. And it's one of the highest in all of baseball. So, why go after a loan of $50 million? That's kind of insane. How bad was kind of like the team's like bleeding that you need a $50 million loan? I think everyone's kind of...
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
So I know a few weeks ago, obviously, we were talking playoff contention and how, Josh Hader didn't want to pitch a 4-out scenario if they weren't in the if they weren't in playoff race, or the Soto possibilities to the Yankees and how that could ruin team chemistry. And I was just spitballing. I didn't realize that. I mean, this is something else that could affect team chemistry. If your owner or whoever runs their pay, if they can't get paid, man, I feel bad for Padres fans. You go out and get Xander Bogaerts, Juan Soto, you get Tatis back from his medication, and you can't even pay your players, and you were hopes and likelies to make it to the World Series this year. It's not a good sign. I don't have good feelings about that.
Well, speaking kind of payroll, apparently the Athletic is saying the Padres are expected to lower it to $200 million. So remember how we were all kind of making fun of the idea Juan Soto could be traded?
Now it seems like he kind of has to be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was making fun of the idea, but I was really hoping it wasn't.
Yeah. So let's just say Juan Soto does get traded. But, of course, we Tyler, me and you both were like, Juan Soto is a Brave.
And we want Ohtani and Soto. Yeah. I just want to make it past the Phillies.
Okay. Well, I mean, where do you guys realistically see, if the Padres are as cash-strapped as this is maybe being as put out as, do you think they take a lower deal just to get them off their books?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, I think it is even more likely now that Juan Soto could be a Brave, sadly, because, I mean, the Braves have a lot of cheaper contracts that they can give up that the Padres can take on if they need to take on some sort of cap, because the Braves might need to unload something because Juan Soto is making a lot of money. But the Braves can unload a couple cheaper deals that the Padres will be able to take, and because the Padres won't be able to take as much salary back in the Juan Soto trade. So they absolutely might need to take less players if that means they'll have to take less salary. So it puts them in a really tricky position for sure. I mean, I've always, this entire season, kind of clowned on the Padres for having a super high payroll. I think it's kind of me coping because the Mets also had a high payroll. But I was also a fan of the Mets dumping a lot of their salary at the deadline. The Padres actually did the opposite, and they took on more salary at the deadline. Obviously, that's not working for them right now. But, I mean, a team that is 1 year removed of being in the NLCS and taking on a couple huge extensions and free agents and signings that they were supposed to be really good this season and missing the playoffs and now being in a position like this is just absolutely absurd.
Well, I mean, I guess my final thought is this is kind of insane. I mean, just a reminder, something I probably played into a part of this when it comes to like getting money. The Padres were the first team that Sinclair did not give a payment to when it came to Bally Sports. So that is something I think that probably played. And I think, what was the payment? I think it was around $50
million. Huh.
Isn't it crazy how those little things affect everything? I mean, it shows how these teams are probably a little bit closer to the edge financial-wise than we think sometimes. But, interesting kind of look when it comes to that perspective. But I guess, besides teams being broke, let's talk about a manager who probably isn't going to be broke at all. Probably his family will never be broke for the rest of their life. Craig Counsell, the former, well, possibly former Milwaukee Brewer manager, he is seemingly going on a free agency tour looking for anyone who would possibly be willing to pay him. I guess your guys' thoughts, kind of a surprising move where, again, he's entering free agency. Everyone thought he's probably going to stay with the Brewers organization. Now that might be changing. I mean, San Diego's open. Astros is open. You have the Mets. I mean, there's a bunch of other, you know, bunch of possible locations where maybe someone with his skill set could possibly go. You guys' thoughts on that?
I would say, I mean, it's definitely an interesting situation to look at. I mean, Craig Counsell is definitely one of the best managers who is currently available right now. There are a bunch of teams who have positions, managerial positions that need to be filled. So I think a lot of those teams will be looking at Craig Counsell. I think it's pretty fitting that we're talking about him, looking at how the Diamondbacks are in the World Series right now. And he played for the Diamondbacks World Series squad back in 2001. I mean, that's besides the point. But Craig Counsell is definitely one of the best managers available, like I was saying. There's a couple teams that are win now or win soon teams that could use a manager like Craig Counsell, all teams that you mentioned, Carson. The Mets are the team that has emerged as the favorite to get him right now, which, as a Mets fan, I'd be excited to see. I'd be really excited to see Craig Counsell manage the Mets for a couple years. I mean, they've announced that their window is more towards maybe 2 years from now, maybe not next year, but maybe 2 years down the road. But I would love to see them take on Craig Counsell now and see what he can do next year to prepare them for 2025, if that's what they want their window to be. So I think it would be a really great move for the Mets. But I think any team who ends up with Counsell will be in a really good position. So,
Tyler, your thoughts?
I really like what Craig Counsell did with the Brewers in a not-so-stacked lineup, being able to take them maybe not deep in the playoffs, but still getting them there. I mean, they got there this year and lost to the now World Series contending Diamondbacks. They've won the NL Central, what, 5 of the last 8 years?
I believe that's correct.
Something like that.
Something in that area, which is, I mean, that guarantees you a playoff spot. I like the consistency, which hurts me to say that there's a good chance that the Astros may see his consistency in making the playoffs and maybe offer him something. And going from Dusty Baker to Craig Counsell, I mean, as an Astros fan, you can't help but just be happy. Even after losing a legendary manager like Dusty Baker and losing Game 7, you can be sad all you want, but then coming back next season with the talent you have and possibly a small chance, hopefully, of getting Craig Counsell as your manager, it's just constant winning, whether it's cheating or not, for that team.
You say that, and I agree with you on a lot of your points. I think Craig Counsell is a great manager. But I think there's something very important to also look at when it comes to this. Now, this could be blamed on the Milwaukee organization, just saying. But where's that Milwaukee playoff success under Craig Counsell?
I only said success of making the playoffs. I never said success in getting there.
It's something I think should be pointed out. If you're looking to make it to the World Series, I mean, Astros, they've had that success under Dusty Baker. San Diego, they didn't exactly have a lot of success. New York, I won't be mean. I mean,
they made it last year.
They made the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah, true.
That's about it.
But you're kind of looking at a point where it's like, okay, are we going to build a lineup around this guy where we can get the best out of this lineup? Or are we just going to like just throw money and hope something happens? Because that sometimes works, and you saw that with kind of San Diego a little bit, and a little bit with Houston, and then sometimes it really doesn't. Again, I hate to pick on them, but New York. I mean, that's the perfect example of throwing money and nothing really happens. So I think that's something that the team should be looking at and saying, okay, look, if I want Craig Counsell to come into my organization, I want him to try to take me to a World Series, I don't see that playoff success compared to his regular season success.
I think it all depends on team. I think if the Astros were to take a chance with Craig Counsell, they sign him to a short deal. And if they don't see playoff success, you can get there all you want. But at some point, if you don't see playoff success, kind of like with the Dodgers, if you don't see playoff success, you start having doubts as a fan or as a teammate or something in that area where you maybe want to change in scenery. I think if it's a team that has talent to contend or are already contenders and they were to sign Craig Counsell, they need to put him on a short leash. I think if a team like San Francisco or, again, unfortunately, the Mets with their losses at the trade deadline, I think a team that may not be contending now or is in a rebuild state, if they sign Craig Counsell, they could give him a little more leeway to give him a couple years, get some talent around him, and see if he can make the playoffs with a, I wouldn't say untalented team, because everyone who's in the MLB is talented, but if you can make it to the playoffs with less talent than a juggernaut team, then give him a couple years, see what he can do with maybe a couple superstars, one superstar and a couple all-stars, and I mean, yeah, that's where I stand on that.
Well, I mean, if you just quickly interrupt, I mean, if you're doing that, I mean, which team would be the best? Because right now, there's a lot of vacancies with really good rosters. So, like, where who I can't think of any rebuilding teams right now that have an open roster besides maybe Milwaukee, but they have shown a reluctance to go out and have a big payroll.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I mean, they got rid of Josh Hader.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I think what Tyler said is pretty spot on. I think he would rather go to a team, or a team would rather have him that is contending, kind of longer term, but maybe not as high of expectations as a team like Houston. Like a team like the Mets, I think the reason he would be a really good fit there is because of the disappointing season that they had this season. They don't have a complete expectation to make the playoffs next season. So if Craig Counsell can take that lineup and bring them to the playoffs, he's actually overperforming than kind of what they would expect him to do. They would expect him to make the playoffs maybe 2 years down the road. So if he can bring them to the playoffs next year, which he can, I believe he can. I mean, I'm hopeful as a Mets fan, obviously. So I think that would be a great fit for him. I would say San Diego maybe the same thing as well, because they had a disappointing season, but they have the roster to bring on someone like him and give it a couple years. But I don't know where that's going anymore because of what's happening we just talked about with their financial situation. They might have to blow some things up, but the Mets are going to keep the majority of their roster around for next season and for the future. And the Mets definitely have a lot more star names than the Brewers. I mean, like Tyler said, I think the Brewers have been a very solid team for the past years where Craig Counsell's managed them, but they haven't been particularly great, and we've seen that in the postseason. But a team like the Mets have a lot of star talent. Lindor, Alonso, Kodai Senga's rising star, Alvarez is a rising star. They have names that can do perform a lot better. The Brewers have played very solid baseball, but aside from Yelich, who hasn't played as many games recently in recent seasons, I mean, like, they don't have a lot of star names. And Corbin Burns, obviously. But they don't have a lot of particular names that kind of stick out and say, hey, like, he's going to help you win a lot of games. So the Mets, maybe Craig Counsell would fit there very well, is what I would think.
Mm. All right. Well, I just, because we got to kind of wrap things up real quick. I think there's excellent points, and like I said already, there's not exactly a lot of playoff success. I think you have to really build a strong roster around him, because again, Mr. Analytics, basically, that's the one thing. That's why I think he's probably going to be a Houston Astro. I can't see any other position where he would not have the most success besides Houston. So, to everyone here, I know that stings to hear, but unfortunately, I see Craig Counsell being a Houston Astro, or at least leading that team. So we'll be back in 5. We got to give you, of course, a Game 5 World Series update. Texas possibly winning tonight, even though we might not be on air for that. So we'll have our reactions to that and more. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
And hello, everyone. Welcome back to the final segment of Student Section MLB. I guess let's get right into it with a live update of Game 5 of the World Series. Of course, Texas Rangers are up 3-1 over the, right now, Arizona Diamondbacks. Could we possibly see a possible winner, or could we see a possible forced Game 6? So, Tyler, give us a quick update.
The Diamondbacks are about to come up to bat for their third time. I believe Corbin Carroll is leading off, so they've already gotten through the order because Eovaldi's given up 3 base runners. Zach Gallen, however, after having a not-so-good first start, he gave up 3 over 5 innings, as Luke said, while we were on break. Gallen is 9 up, 9 down in a must-win game for the Diamondbacks. So we're going into the bottom of the third right now. We may be finished with the fourth inning by the end of the show.
So I guess right now it looks like we are possibly seeing another pitcher's battle comparable to like Game 3 of this series. I mean, Texas won that pitcher's battle. Do you think that we could possibly see a reversal happen? Maybe Arizona is able to kind of, you know, make a kind of pull a Uno reverse and say, okay, you had your pitcher's game, now we have yours.
I think we're getting a Game 6.
You think so?
I think so, because the Diamondbacks, it looks like they're seeing Eovaldi well. They're taking – it looks like they're reading his splitter well, which is something you have to do. If a pitcher has a splitter, you have to be able to see it good, or else you are going to strike out 12 times as a team. So they're seeing his pitches well, his breaking pitches especially. They're laying off close fastballs. They're getting walks. I think they have – yeah, they have two hits, I believe. And it doesn't look like the Rangers have really caught up to Zach Gallen's mix of a fastball cutter splitter. So I believe Zach Gallen is going to get the Diamondbacks a win. They may not make it to Game 7, but I think they can at least get a force to Game 6, make it a little closer.
Mm-hmm. So I guess speaking of Arizona, if you did not see the rumor mill coming out this weekend, Arizona could possibly be returning to that teal main coloring. I guess your guys' thoughts on that, potentially that could return, and they won't say D-backs anymore, it would say Diamondbacks, where we're talking basically a return to old school uniforms, probably some modern updates. I guess your guys' thoughts, possibly, you know, their last, you know, the last current uniform appearance being in a World Series, of course.
I think that would be sick, honestly. I think their old jerseys are some of the coolest jerseys like, baseball has ever seen. I think the old color scheme they had was really cool. I like the red and the black that they have kind of now. I like the red jerseys. They're in the white jerseys tonight. But I really like the purple Diamondbacks. So that would be really cool if they could or like that teal purple like blend. I think that was really, really cool. And you could kind of see they have like on these white jerseys, they have kind of tints of that tealish color. But I think that would be a really cool change to their uniforms.
Mm-hmm. So, man, is there any other teams that probably should make that uniform switch? Because I can think of one possibly right now. Seattle.
Honestly, I think I don't like the jerseys that they were wearing sometimes this year. Those like alternate, those dark blue ones. I wasn't too.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the green ones.
The city, yeah.
I'm talking about the green ones, not the. Not
I love the green Mariners jerseys. I like. I really
not,
do.
It's not a dark green. I think if like the Red Sox had a green monster colored jersey.
Well, I mean the Boston Red green. Sox had those like blue and yellow ones for some reason.
Those were ugly. Those
I never understood. But yeah, but they're like 25-2 when they wear it. I don't know. I don't know that. I don't think it's a nice jersey. I don't understand why it has to be foul pole yellow. But I mean, if you're winning while wearing
and you're the Boston Red Sox, why do you have a yellow and blue jersey?
I don't even know how it relates to the city either. Those jerseys just kind of
from
stick
my understanding,
out.
It's like supposed to be like connected to like some local thing, but like.
It doesn't make sense to anybody, but I guarantee you it doesn't make much sense to some Red Sox fans who are like, wow, where'd this come from? Why couldn't we just get pinstripes?
No.
And I mean, some of the City Connect jerseys are so cool, too. Like, I like the Rockies and the Astros ones
the
particularly.
Cincinnati Reds.
But that one, too. I mean, there's so much cool stuff you could do with a City Connect jersey. And to do something like that, I think it's cool that they did something so different from their actual jersey. But I think that what they did looks ugly, so... But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're going to change that. I don't know. In terms of main jerseys, I mean, there's not any I particularly dislike in MLB. Trying to kind of pick out an old school jersey that I like a lot particularly. I feel like that's more like basketball has some really cool
retro jerseys.
But
retro jersey.
Those ones are
the
cool,
green,
too.
Yeah, but that's iconic.
Yeah. But yeah,
so that,
I mean,
it has a place in my heart.
Mm. You know what we should have come back when we're speaking of Seattle? Turn ahead the clock.
Oh yeah, I want some sleeveless jerseys.
Yeah, yeah. There we go. Let's see. Was Seattle and who else? I'm trying to remember.
It was Seattle and the Twins.
Yes,
they were playing. They were playing in the. It was the
Kingdom.
The Dome. They were playing in the Dome when it.
It was like the final, like one of the final Kingdom games.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought one of the final Kingdom games was in like 2008.
No, the Kingdom like closed in 1999. And that's when the turn ahead the clock promotion happened.
Loved it. Well, yeah, that.
Okay, I think so the White Sox should wear shorts again. That's what I think.
Oh.
I think that's a jersey and a uniform change.
Heaven forbid they steal.
Speaking
they
of the White Sox,
then.
Remember the story? This was like 10 years old now. Remember how that one player, like the throwback jerseys, they were so awfully literally took a racer.
Yep. But I think the White Sox have a really cool City Connect jersey too. The Southside jersey is really cool in my opinion.
Quick update. Diamondbacks, Corbin Carroll got a leadoff hit. Ketel Marte walked. sacrifice bunt. There are runners on second and third with one out in the bottom of the third for Eovaldi. Can he get out of his third straight inning with runners in scoring position?
Yeah, I mean, he's done it before a bunch of times. He's gotten out a lot of jams. We'll see if he can do it again. I really like what the Diamondbacks are doing right now. In the first inning when Corbin Carroll walked on four pitches, Ketel Marte, who's been hitting out of his mind, was showing bunt. I'm a fan of small ball, and I think in a must-win game like this, I like what they're doing, so I like the sacrifice bunt there, and I think it really puts them in a really good spot. But Nathan Eovaldi with in the clutch is insane. So I mean, this is shaping up to be a really good inning. So we'll see.
So I guess real quick, before we head off the air, give everyone a quick, kind of rundown of what's happening right now.
Eovaldi is in a 2-0 count with Christian Walker, who already walked in this game. There are runners on second and third with one out. Diamondbacks, Walker is looking for an RBI opportunity or is looking to walk the bases loaded. Eovaldi's second pitch to him was a curveball that got away from him, and it bounced, and Jonaheim luckily blocked it, or we would have a 1-0 ball game because it's Corbin Carroll on third.
Mm. All right. Well, then, I guess since we're right now, we're at the third right now, are we going to see a game six? I'm saying yes. Right now, it looks like Arizona's pitching is playing suburban. It feels like they're playing with their backs against the wall. That's always a scary thing when playing another team. I'm saying we're seeing a game six, and they're going to be playing back in Arlington.
I say there's a game six. There will be a game in Arlington. You know what? I'll have hope and say we'll see a game seven.
All right. I'm saying six, but you're saying
like
seven.
I just want to see more of it.
All right. I understand. All right. Luke, your thoughts.
I mean, I'm going to double down. Last week, this is what I said last week. I said the Rangers were going to win game one. They were going to lose game two and split the home opener and continue their road streak and win in five by winning games 3, 4, and 5 all on the road. So I kind of have to double down and say I think they're going to win this game. I do think the Diamondbacks are playing very well right now. Zach Gallen, who has had quite a disappointing postseason, he'll probably be NL Cy Young runner-up, and his postseason ERA is a full over one higher than his regular season ERA, but he's pitching easily the best he has this postseason so far. It is early in the game. Nathan Eovaldi's not pitching poorly either, and the Rangers have been pretty good in the clutch and shown really good defense in this series. One of my unsung heroes of this World Series so far is definitely Josh Jung. He's been playing really good defense. I think the Rangers can lock this one down, so I'm saying that they hold it down. Rangers in five.
All right. Well, I think that just about wraps it up for this week's episode of Student Section MLB. Next week, we'll be probably talking about a World Series winner, who that team's going to be. Right now, I'm saying the Texas Rangers. I think we all agree with that. But, hey, things can change. We've seen some wacky World Series, and we still have an entire Game 5 to go through.
They escaped the jam.
we'll be back next week. Until then, stay safe, and we'll see you around.